Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, pro wrestling fans, and of course also all these sports entertainment fans? You are listening to the latest edition of Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
No, I've been repackaged. I'm no longer PBR. I'm the PR superstar. I'm so damn Puerto Rican, my initials are PR. But it's a pleasure to be back, enjoying this wonderful Saturday morning or afternoon now, having bagels, a little coffee, and ready to chop up all things professional wrestling / sports entertainment with the professor.
All right. That's what I like to hear. And folks, always remember to shoot us an email about what you like about the show, what you don't like, maybe topics we're not covering that we should be. Shoot us an email at the inbox, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @working_the_marks, and certainly on Twitter as well, @working_marks, and also our own Instagrams, @nofilteruribe and @pattyreakin, of course. And
DD.
Ladies and gentlemen.
DD, not TP, DD.
That's it. PADDYRICAN, folks, our social media keeps growing, and it's all because of you, our great fans here. Listen, for the PR superstar, it's been a hell of a week here. Let's get right to it. Pat, I got to tell you, man, Hell in a Cell, for all the chatter and all the chirping that marks like to do online and all their grievances that they put forth, I got to say, the pay-per-view was fine. I thought it was good. I'll just start off with this. I mean, I think every match was solid, well-produced. What I probably didn't like is, again, my opinion, there's a couple matches I probably could have done without on the premium live event. Jeez, I can't believe I said that. Again, I'm a big Kevin Owens fan. That match with Ezekiel, that could have been on Raw. The match with Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin, again, that match could have been on SmackDown. But, again, that's my own personal preference. But overall, I have to say, the PLE, it was solid.
Yeah. I can't believe you abbreviated premium live event. If I were you, I would trademark that now before it becomes a thing. To your point about like Madcap and Corbin, they did a lot of weeks of TV to build towards that match at the premium live event. So that was kind of the payoff to get Corbin off TV. Madcap is really just growing more and more. I'm kind of in.
Pat, I hate to cut you off real quick. It's not necessarily off TV yet. They will have a last laugh match next week on SmackDown. So I think that's going to be the payoff to get Corbin off TV,
okay.
For the record. Yeah, for the record. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Then pardon me on that.
What that means, so I have no idea. What that means, the last laugh match? I mean, hey, your guess is as good as mine. But that's the stipulation next week on SmackDown. But I'm sorry.
I mean, maybe I could imagine like Brian Last coming out with like a little bit of Manischewitz, and like he's the special enforcer ringside or something. I don't know. I can't really think of too much. I guess like, you know, they had built up towards that. It was, in fairness, it was a solid match. I thought Madcap is doing great. I'm kind of in a little bit afraid for him that. He, you know, now that he kind of ditched the joke gimmick, which in fairness was getting over with the audience, marks don't like it, but whatever. Marks don't like anybody that doesn't know, like, you know, a Mahi Straw Cradle or the fucking Rancho Cucamonga Hold of Death. But, you know, he might kind of get lost in the shuffle because that gimmick was really helping him. But let's see. I mean, he's a talented guy, and we'll see where he goes. As far as, like, Owens and Ezekiel, it's kind of the same thing, too. They really built that up. And, you know, I'm sure Ezekiel's brother Elias was watching and enjoying every second of the bout. You know, unfortunately, though, his brother lost. But, you know, I didn't think even that was terrible. I mean, I thought the whole show was pretty decent for the most part. It was pretty solid. The standout matches for me were the triple threat match to open the show between Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, and Asuka. I thought, you know, no surprise there. All three women put in a fantastic performance. And then the main event. The main event to me is one of the best matches of all time and Cody's defining moment so far in his WWE run. And I would even say overall in his entire WWE run, and, you know, his previous run in WWE before he left and this one now, I would say that might be his best match ever. And it was just a masterpiece. I thought the way that they told the story was perfect. I thought, you know, people, just the little things like the buildup to taking off the jacket and then the initial shock and like awe and like kind of disgust, you know, and you know, terror. Because, I mean, like, yeah, we had heard that he had torn a pec, and there's been instances in the past in the business where guys have gotten injuries and then they gimmick it up. But that was pretty darn legit, if I say so myself. And just everything that they did, Rollins, fantastic performance from him, coming out with the dusty polka dots, just all the little things that they did, him whipping them with the belt, and then the pedigree spot with the hammer and everything else. Perfect storytelling. And it's interesting to me because I know Marks cry a lot about people winning and losing and all this other stuff. Seth Rollins is on a 3-match losing streak, but he's still putting in bangers. And I don't think the perception of Seth Rollins as a performer has changed in any type of way. You know, so he's one of those guys that, like, I think regardless of whatever booking is, he's just always going to come out on top because he's just such a really, really talented performer. And I wasn't always this high on him, but he's really coming to his own this last year or so.
Well, Pat, real quick, and I'm glad you brought up Seth Rollins because it's interesting, you know, wrestling fans get very fickle on the Twitterverse, on Instagram, on Facebook about guys that either are booked to lose way too often. But let's be very fair. Seth Rollins has taken a lot of L's on pay-per-views, you know, premium PLEs, for months now. I mean, let's go back to last year's SummerSlam in Las Vegas. I mean, great match against Edge. Edge came out with the Brood entrance and the music. Oh, my God, it was amazing. More on Edge later, folks. But and then at Hell in a Cell a couple months later, I think it was in Saudi Arabia, in a Hell in a Cell match, he lost again. And then let's be honest, he's, you know, lost to, I believe, a couple other people along the way and then during this entire feud with Cody. So it's like, it's funny when people online talk about, oh, this guy's getting buried and this guy's being, you know, misused. No, I don't think anyone says that about Seth Rollins. This guy's taken more L's than the Mets in October. Let's be fair about it. But it doesn't really kill his currency as a great worker and as a guy that's still a main eventer. I mean, unless I'm wrong.
No, I think you nailed it. I mean, and don't forget to add the Rangers in June, too, along with the Mets in October. He's just one of those guys, you know, he's like a Shawn Michaels in that sense. He's like a Ric Flair in that sense. You know, Ric Flair could lose. I mean, Ric Flair, if you think about it, Ric Flair lost the title 16 times. Nobody ever complained, they're burying Flair, he's not over, you know, like, no, fucking Ric Flair, he's over. That's it. You're over. You're good. You know, you're fine. And it's kind of the same thing with Shawn. Shawn would lose, but it never affected his, it never hurt his stock. You know what I mean? And, you know, Seth right now is one of those guys that he goes out there, always has a banger for the most part, and, you know, just really does a lot of very good little things, you know. Some people might kind of talk a little smack about, you know, his over-the-top personality now and stuff like that, but, like, I think it's excellent. And to be quite honest, I'm really happy for him because he finally found something that he kind of made his own. You know, and even something as simple as wearing a suit, right, which I'm pretty sure you know a little something about, you know, wearing a suit, right, you know, guys have been coming out in suits for years in wrestling programs, but he was like, wait a minute, I want to come out in a suit, but I don't want to come out in a suit like everybody else. I want to wear fucking outrageous suits. So he went and he just started wearing all these outrageous suits and all these crazy outfits, and his gear got more outrageous. But now that in itself is a little highlight of the program. So people always look forward to see what he's going to wear. It's like Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania when he would come out always dressed like a superhero or something. People always wanted to see what he was going to be wearing. And Rollins has managed to do that, and Rollins has really managed to improve himself in so many different, you know, facets of his game that he's definitely a guy that's really performing at a very high level now, for sure.
No, listen, absolutely. And, again, a solid PLE, obviously start to build towards Money in the Bank and eventually SummerSlam later in Nashville in late July, first time in July ever in the history of SummerSlam since it debuted in 1988. Let's get to the news here. Big news, obviously, as a result of what happened on Sunday, Pat, I would argue the best of their three matches. Cody Rhodes went out there with a torn pectoral muscle. Clearly kind of reminds you of that awful image of Triple H when he tore his pectoral and he had that that close-up selfie showing the damage. Listen, Cody, courageous effort on Sunday, reported. I mean, there's different reports this week. Surgery was successful. He could be anywhere between 6 to 9 months. There's no way to have a recovery time where he'd be back from Money in the Bank. So, I mean, that's a big killer. I think maybe from what people like Billy Body were talking about, like he seemed like maybe a favorite to win the briefcase. That's not going to be the case. Maybe he'll be back for the Rumble. Maybe he'll be one of those surprise entrants, and I'm sure the building will pop when the lights go out and you hear that, you know, that entrance of his. It's a shame. Cody was doing really good work on the mic. Great trilogy of matches with Seth Rollins. Again, with him being out 6 to 9 months, time for somebody else to step up. But that's really tragic this week to hear on the news cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And to quote the voice of a professional wrestling, JR, he's suffering a $2 steak. For him to go out there, to have the kind of match that he had, which I agree with you is the best of the trilogy, it took so much guts. And again, like everything about the match I thought was excellent. You know, even building up to it without the injury, I thought it was great. But the injury added just a whole other layer to it and really made Cody more courageous in the long run. I'm with you. I think he's doing just some of the best work that he's doing, the psychology in the match, everything. I mean, I can put that match over for days. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And, I just think that it's a real shame, the timing of this injury, because Cody was really starting to ascend. And really, I think, was making a case for being the top babyface there. I can't really think of anybody else that would be a bigger babyface than him right now. Like, you know, not McIntyre, not Lashley, you know, not some of the usual suspects in these last couple of years. You know, he's the one who really stood out. And just everything. I mean, like, I kind of feel like we were seeing peak Cody. And it's a shame. I think they might have kayfabed that a little bit. I think maybe it might be 6 months, and they're saying 9 months to kind of throw the fans off, so that way when he comes back at the Rumble, it's a bigger surprise. So I hope that if that is the case, that they can keep it hushed between now and then, and kind of just get him out there, because it'll be a huge, huge pop, and I would expect him to win the Rumble, honestly, if he does come back at the Rumble.
Well, I mean, listen, that's still I have to disagree. I mean, if we're moving towards Rocky versus Roman at WrestleMania, I mean, I would argue that probably that's going to be the match. How, Cody fits into that, whether or not he'd win the Rumble or Rocky wins I don't know. Listen, a lot of things can materialize in the next 6 months, but I mean, if that's what it seems like we're moving towards next year in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, who knows? I mean, again, we'll see. I mean, it seems like it's supposed to be Rocky and Roman, but who knows? Maybe it could be Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case. I mean, the other thing too we have to consider is like a lot can change after the draft. You know what I'm saying? Like the belts might be unified now, just for now. You know what I'm saying? Until the draft happens. Obviously, the brand thing is no longer really a thing, at least between now and September. But after the draft, they're more than likely, they're probably going to end up bringing that other belt back, So I wouldn't be surprised if there's two world championships again. And then, Roman takes on Rocky, because Rocky doesn't need to win the Rumble. Rocky showing up merits a championship opportunity. He doesn't have to go through some hokey ass rankings. Like he is a draw. He's a talent, I'm pretty sure if somebody else, a certain other promoter in this country, with a major TV deal had Rocky, he might have him, you know, fight Danny Garcia, or even though he probably did fight her in court, you know, he'd probably end up, you know, fighting Darby Allin or some nonsense. Like, he would have to earn his way. Mind you, this is, you know, arguably the most popular wrestler ever. And, you know, he's going to have to earn his way. So I think you could kind of hotshot that. Mm-hmm. You don't need the Rumble for Rocky. Rocky's won the Rumble. It does nothing. Cody winning the Rumble means a lot more, especially after everything that he's went through. And you also have to consider the fact that the last image of Cody Rhodes that the fans are going to have is him with that injury, getting beat up by Rollins. Think about how big it would be and the kind of storytelling it would be if it comes down to him and Rollins in the Rumble and he eliminates Rollins. And look, I like what they're doing with that. I don't think Rollins has to win. I think that the storytelling is excellent with, you know, like everybody has that one guy, right? Like every fighter had that one guy. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez was that one guy for Manny Pacquiao. Like, Manny Pacquiao beat him, but Marquez would knock him out cold. And it's just like that one, like your weakness, like that one guy that's got your number. And to me, I like this whole Cody Rhodes has Rollins' number thing. You know, I really, really like it. And that would be really, really big. So let's see how things play out between now and then, you know?
No, absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of hokey, listen, I'm going to put on my academic hat right now. I'm going to not be the journalist, the premier journalist that I am. I'm going to be the academic that I am. Patrick, I'm going to tell you something. If there was ever a time I was ever prompted to want to ever smoke marijuana or consume an edible, it was this week during Dynamite. I mean, you know, I'll tell you something. Nothing has ever prompted me to ever want to smoke weed more so than having to endure a grown man who, again, according to his Wikipedia, has a business degree from the University of Illinois. Maybe, you know, not one of the you know, better academic powerhouses in the Big Ten Conference, in my opinion. But again, speaking as a Rutgers alum, I'm a little bougie like that to say. But what was Tony Khan thinking this week? I don't have a problem introducing a new title. I mean, introduce a new title, that's fine. But when you call it the All Atlantic Championship, okay, and again, folks, you know, I don't want to be one of these snobby academics, but let's have geography 101 here today. Okay, when you look at the All-Atlantic Championship title, aside from the fact it resembles almost every other title now, the women's title, the Owen Hart Foundation inaugural Memorial Cup Tournament Championship title for the men and women, both, you know, owned by Adam Cole and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, I'm looking at this title, Patrick, with the flags of, yeah, fine, United States, great, Canada, great, I don't got a problem with that. But I see the Japanese and Chinese flag as well as, well, it's not the Australian flag, it's the English flag, so that's fine. Can someone explain to me, or maybe that Tony Khan, again, I don't know what the academic standards are at the University of Illinois, but at some point, did he not take Geography 101, or did someone in production or in the creative meeting not sit down with Tony Khan and say, hey, Tony, by the way, yeah, create this title, that's not a problem, but don't put the Chinese flag and the Japanese flag on a championship that is explicitly the All-Atlantic Championship. Because last time I heard, Patrick, Japan and China are nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, unless we want to talk about the brief water that exists in the Panama Canal that connects the oceans. But this is asinine. But what do you expect from AEW?
Well, you know, I'm not gonna be like a jerk about this too much, but like I don't have a problem with them wanting to do that. I mean, do I think that they should do that? No, I think that they should use the Ring of Honor titles that they already have instead of creating a new championship and get those belts over on their program.
Oh, and Pat, by the way, I'm sorry to cut you off, but here are the brackets. Sure. This is what makes it even more egregious and outlandish to me. The brackets were Buddy Matthews representing Australia. Fine, I'd rather against Australia. Hot women, love it, those Instagram pages, all those Australian women. But Australia is nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean. Now, yes, he fought Pac, where Australia fights England. Okay, fine, Pac won. You have coming up this week on Dynamite, Ethan Page representing Canada. Great, okay, Canada, okay, fine, whatever. All right. Fighting Miro, representing Bulgaria. By the way, Bulgaria is nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean. Okay, I mean, there's probably other bodies of water near Bulgaria, but it's not the Atlantic Ocean. And then, of course, you have Penta del Sol, Penta Zero Miedo, I believe. I'm sorry. The Penta Oscuro, excuse me, representing Mexico. Fine, you know, Mexico. I don't got a problem with that. Fighting Malakai Black in the other bracket, where last I heard, I believe, in Holland / Amsterdam, that's nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, maybe closer than I think. And then you have the New Japan bracket where it's two New Japan stars in the bracket. Jesus Christ. Can someone, like, you know what? When people make fun of AEW, it's precisely because of asinine things like this. Yeah, introduce a title. And maybe I'm sounding like a really snobby academic, but this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks asinine, Patrick. I'm sorry, bro.
Well, see, what had happened was is that he's taken so much Adderall that he's put himself in a different universe. I think it's like he's like on Earth 7. And in Earth 7, the Atlantic Ocean, like, holds everything together. Like, it's in the middle of everything. So in Earth 7, which is the Earth that he's in, you know, all of those aforementioned countries are near the Atlantic Ocean. So that's what happened. I think what I just said might be a more logical explanation than anything else I could try and come up with. Again, like, you have belts already. Use those Ring of Honor titles. Get it over on your TV so that when you have your pay-per-views for the Ring of Honor, it matters a little bit more. And maybe there's guys that are a little bit more, you know, nationally recognized or globally recognized that people might give a rat's ass about to actually buy the thing. But, you know, to create another belt, you know, whatever, that he could do that, I guess. You know, it's his company. Like, that's what he wants to do. But, like, fuck, man. Like, nobody took a look at the draft. Nobody was just – nobody, like, looked at it and just said, what the – what? No, that doesn't make any sense. Like, nobody did that. Like, this guy sat in a room full of people, all right? And some of these people are some of the most respected people in the business. And not one of those people said, hey, Tony, by the way, yeah, Japan? Nah, bro. Not Atlantic, you know? I think that it's one of two things. It could be that everybody in the company just doesn't want to say anything to stir him up because he has very thin skin, and they feel like if they say something, he might freak out about it, so it's just not worth it. Or, you know, everybody kind of just goes along with it, you know, because they're all paying him. You know, like, he's paying all of them, and you know, they can kind of just,
way,
you know.
And by the way, it's, to your point, it's even more embarrassing because if there are other grown adults in the room, okay, and again, you don't need a PhD, ladies and gentlemen, in political science. But it's somewhere along the line, even in elementary school, when we take history, when we take geography, like, okay, and I'm not trying to say that pro wrestlers – listen, there are a lot of intelligent pro wrestlers. Not all of them have to go to school. They're life smart. They're book smart, whatever. That's fine. But along the way, somehow, these adults in the room with Tony had to have been, like, looking at each other and say, wait a minute, this is – whether it's the EVPs, right?
Yeah.
If there are any left, like Kenny Omega, Matt and Nick Jackson. I
the
mean,
Bucks, yeah.
My God. Yeah, like, really? Nobody had even a moment? I mean, I'm kind of alarmed that his father, who's a billionaire, probably didn't say anything to him. Like,
I find it very hard to believe that these guys have never seen a mat before. You know what I mean? Like, how can you be alive and not have seen a map to say, hey, it's not the Atlantic Ocean, man. It's nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean. I just think people don't care, or they're complicit. Like, they're just their yes men, and they're just like, ah, you're right, Tony. Whatever. It's cool. It's fine. You know? I just can't see that. Like, it's bananas.
It's alarming.
It's bananas to me.
Alarming.
I think he's very thin-skinned, and I think that, you know, it is what it is. But he should have taken the Ring of Honor titles. I mean, he's had the Ring of Honor titles already on his TV. You know what I mean? Like, why not have those guys actually defend it? Why not do interesting things with those titles? So, again, when those titles get defended on the Ring of Honor show, you know, and regardless, the AEW people are going to tune in, but just try and have it make some sense. I say it all the time. We say it all the time on this show. If they ever get, you know, if Dark Side of the Ring ever comes back or whatever, or something to that effect, the AEW episode of it is going to be pretty interesting. And it's going to be funny to hear some of the things that probably went on during the introduction of the All Atlantic Championship. So
I
look forward to that in the future.
I'm sure. And to your point about more titles, I mean, yes, currently on television now, you see to the best of my knowledge, three Ring of Honor championships represented. You have Wheeler Yuta, the pure champion. You have FTR, the World Tag Team Champions, one of the better teams on the planet. You have Samoa Joe, the reigning defending television champion. So, I mean, listen, with Battle of the Belts coming up, Battle of the Belts 3 coming up, yeah, I mean, all right, well, you want to have more belts on TV, there you go. But I just think this was a really bad idea. I think it just makes Tony Khan look even more foolish. And listen, whether he doubles down and continues with this or just maybe modifies the belt slightly, I don't know. We'll see. But staying in AEW, this week on Dynamite, the Battle Royal opened the show, Pat, to determine who would face Jon Moxley to be the undisputed number one contender for the AEW Championship going into Forbidden Door in Chicago later this month on a Sunday. I'll be honest with you. It was a weird battle royal. It was one of those, it was like groups. It was like along the line of like cards, you know, the group of clubs came out, the group of aces came out, the group of spades, and then a Joker. I mean, no big surprises during the battle royal. Andrade was the Joker. He was the last guy in. It was weird. It was kind of like a Royal Rumble-ish type of battle royal where, like, every 5 minutes a new group of guys came in. But it wasn't just one guy. It was, like, a group of five. And, listen, no offense to Kyle O'Reilly. I like Kyle O'Reilly. He's an exceptional worker. But, you know, he won the battle royal, faced Moxley in a knockdown, drag-out fight. You can tell they beat the piss out of each other. Moxley went on to win that match. He'll be at Forbidden Door in Chicago awaiting the winner of, I believe, whoever faces each other at New Japan Dominion coming up, I believe. And that will crown, again, in an asinine way, an interim AEW world champion, as CM Punk apparently did have successful surgery this week on what, I don't know, because they haven't really specified what part of his body required surgery. But that this will crown an AEW interim champion in the meantime. This is just ridiculous booking, and it's a cluster blank as far as I'm concerned.
I think that they're trying to do what UFC does, where they crown interim champions. But I don't know, man. I also think it's kind of a byproduct of their ranking system, you know, and how they have it set up. Because, you know, if Punk comes back and he's healthy, obviously you want to push Punk for the world title. So what better way to push him for the world title than just keeping the belt on him and having him face the interim champion? I get that. But still, even the setup to get to that, it's still very confusing. It's not digestible for, like, you know, the average person. I mean, there's a million and one different ways that they could do things. You know, battle royals, like, they really don't mean anything, let's be honest. You know, there's very few battle royals that mean anything, and the only one that really stands out, obviously, is the Royal Rumble. Outside of that, nobody really gives a rat's ass about anything. Even the Andre the Giant Memorial over the top rope invitational battle royal kind of, you know, dwindled and faded out. But I don't know, man. They could have done it a million different ways. I still say that, you know, had Tony been a better booker, I think, at the beginning and all throughout, and had done things that made sense instead of just, well, I'm not going to put this WWE guy over my AEW guy because my AEW guy is my guy. Like, okay, fair. I kind of get that. But, like, there's better ways to do it where you actually put it on the guy that, you know, means something and then, you know, build up that guy, your AEW guy, to the point where it's believable that he could take on that WWE guy and then have him beat him. You know what I mean? But moreover, they're not WWE guys anymore. They're AEW guys. They are the talent that he has available. And look, I'm going to put over Impact real quick. Impact, people can say whatever the hell they want about Impact, but Impact at least took the stars that they had and put them in positions that mattered and put them in positions where people would want to tune in to see them. Even now, they take the most recognizable guys that they have and they put them at the top of the card and they mix them up with their guys, but they do it in a way that it makes sense, you know? So I just think the whole setup of the tournament, everything's kind of hokey. When you and I were talking about it, I kind of said, hey, it's going to end up being Moxley and a dude who could work the Japanese style. Sure enough, it was Kyle O'Reilly. And, you know, no offense to Kyle O'Reilly, great wrestler, fantastic wrestler, one of the best guys on the planet. But, like, he's not a big character guy. And Moxley is a talented wrestler, but he's a big character guy, and he's a great promo. You need somebody that kind of has that personality that could kind of rival him, that could kind of do that. You know, and I just think that, you know, they missed an opportunity. I mean, like, Wardlow and him would have been interesting. I mean, what the fuck have you been building up Wardlow for? Oh, Wardlow doesn't want to compete for the world title right now because he wants to take on CM Punk when he's healthy. I mean, how stupid is that?
Exactly.
Is that?
Exactly. And that even builds into the notion that this ranking system is a farce because, again, if you look at the ranking system, right, it was like Moxley was number four. Now, again, the justification, and we talked about this last week, the justification to have him be the number one contender is because in 2022 thus far, he's 7-0 in singles competition. That was the variable that went into determining him as the number one contender. But let's be honest, if you go by the ranking system, right, Adam Cole, say what you want. Again, notwithstanding what you think about Adam Cole, he's number three in the ranking, and I think it was Wardlow was number two, and then it was Scorpio Sky, the reigning TNT champion, was the number one contender according to the ranking.
That makes sense. Those four make sense in a four-way.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Now, again,
but
because
Cole's
Adam
injured.
He's reportedly injured. You know, Scorpio Sky, I guess they're having in some other feud for the TNT championship. But again, the idea that Wardlow, listen, he's hot right now. Say what you want. He's still very green. He still can improve upon a lot of things. But to have him now in a match next week, because again, according to the storyline, he ripped up a piece of paper that Smart Mark Sterling, again, MGF's attorney, drew up. Well, he could either go to court and fight it or have the class action lawsuit match where he has to fight the 20 guys in the security force that is comprised of AEW. I mean, that's crazy.
Wow.
Next Wednesday, like, that just doesn't make any sense. It's anticlimactic because you know the Wardlow's going to beat these 20 guys some way, somehow, whether it's a gauntlet match, whatever. It just, again, it's, we've always talked about what we think is bad booking. I bitch and moan about booking because, oh, well, I wouldn't have booked it this way. And you've always said to me, well, Fernando, it's not that, you know what you like. It doesn't mean it's bad booking. And I think fans, especially Marks, have to differentiate. Like, you can say you don't like something, but then don't say it's bad booking. I can honestly say in this circumstance, this is bad booking. Like, from a storyline, logistical perspective. I think that's the fundamental difference. When I bitch and moan about Vince, oh, I don't like the way he booked this. Well, it's because I know what I like, and I just didn't like Vince doing this because it wasn't for me. That's different than this being completely illogical booking, which is what Khan's doing. In Wardlow's circumstance, again, nothing against Moxley. He's a recognized name. You want to have a recognized name going into Forbidden Door. Okay, because Cole's injured, because you're not going to use Wardlow in that way, because you're not going to use Scorpio Sky that way. Well, then, you know, you're not going to put Jericho in a title match, God forbid. I mean, God help us, you know. And I'm a big Jericho fan, but he should be nowhere near a title picture ever again.
Yeah.
But the problem is that now it's like, well, it's going to be Moxley against a New Japan guy. And I know you're the New Japan aficionado. I've been watching it for a little bit now. Obviously, it's on Access TV after Impact on Thursday nights. But, like, it's still – this Forbidden Door pay-per-view lacks a lot of sizzle, bro. I'm sorry to say.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, here's the thing. Like, with getting back to the Wardlow thing, like, why is Wardlow in a squash match? Like, because that's what it's going to be. It's Wardlow against Swing, but it's going to be a squash match. And it's just going to be him gorilla pressing all these guys, and they're all going to be waiting to catch each other. And it's going to be – I mean, like, he's above that now. They've proven that with the MJF feud, you know? And you know, I get, okay, maybe they might want to push him for the All-Atlantic Championship, but, like, throw him in, make a four-way with Scorpio Sky, with Moxley, you know, maybe substitute somebody else for Adam Cole because he's injured, you know, throw in Wardlow because he's one of the hottest guys going right now in the company, you know, and that's it. And do it in a way where you could use that to set up Wardlow's next program and have Moxley go and compete for the title against the New Japan guy. But I wouldn't even do it where I would have them go against the New Japan guy. I would have the New Japan guys do their own separate thing, and I would just do that. And, like, I understand that, like, okay, yeah, he has to, you know, have the AEW title defended, but, like, I would just have it between the two AEW guys at that show. I would do Wardlow and Moxley and have Wardlow, you know, lose, but lose in a way that, like, still makes him look fucking strong. You know, I think Khan's going to end up putting it on Tanahashi, and Tanahashi's going to have the title, and he's going to, they're going to wait till Punk comes back for him to have the match against Tanahashi and have him beat Tanahashi. I wouldn't be surprised, but they could also go the Moxley route because he does want to work with WWE guys. You know, I wasn't really particularly sold on Forbidden Door because, you know, if you're not going to announce Okada and Danielson for that crowd, for people who know wrestling, you know, it's what's the point? Like, what's the point? Whatever main event you're going to have is not going to be as good, you know? And I'm pretty sure it's going to end up being Danielson against Zack Sabre Jr., which is going to be a fantastic, you know, technical wrestling match. It's going to be really, really good, hard-hitting, excellent stuff. But, you know, I don't want that now. I want to see Okada and Danielson. I want to see the two best in their respective time.
Well, speaking of Okada, apparently it was teased this week with Hangman Adam Page came out after a match. He won. He took the mic. And I think he kind of laid the case out. He wants Okada at Forbidden Door. That's kind of interesting where, and again, some other websites had some rumors where, oh, okay, maybe they'll flip titles where Tanahashi wins the AEW belt and Hangman beats Okada for the new I don't see that. If someone's going to beat Okada, I don't think it's going to be Hangman. I'm sorry. Nothing against Hangman Page. He's been a good worker, a little flat on his promos and his personality, but I don't see that happening. If it's not Danielson, because if he's still hurt, maybe legitimately, and maybe he's not going to be healthy enough for Forbidden Door, it's not the worst thing in the world to have Hangman and Okada, Pat.
Or Ospreay. Ospreay would be another choice, but to have him go over on Okada. I get what you're saying, but dude, it's just it's very lackluster. And then they're gonna throw in Cole. It's gonna be a triple threat. Why is Adam Cole in there? Like, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, maybe Jay White. I mean, listen. Adam Cole also teased Jay White should have, because remember, isn't Jay White fighting Okada? I think soon. I think this month, right before Forbidden Door.
I believe at Dominion. Yes.
So I mean.
I don't know, dude. It just it's very lackluster. I'm sorry, and there's just so much. Like, you could do Jericho against Toriano. That's perfect because Jericho could work that, you know, that comedy style, and like he's kind of doing his comedy thing. Yano's got his comedy thing, but they can work. You know, like he can work with him, and he'll make it work. There's just so many things that they could do that would be better than what they're actually doing. You know, and Hangman's a talented guy, but, like, I don't know, man. Like, him against Okada, just, it'll be a good wrestling match, I'm sure. But it's just not there for me. The intrigue isn't there to watch it live. You know
listen,
what I mean?
I think, obviously, Khan was banking on Punk headlining Forbidden Door in Chicago at the United Center, right, kind of like full circle from his debut last August, which we'll talk about a little bit later, folks, so stick around, obviously, because you definitely want to hear our take on this. But the, you know, this pay-per-view is, I think, really lacking, and we're only about 2 weeks out. Let's get back to WWE, some news cycles here. Walter won the IC Championship last night on SmackDown. Hell of a match against Ricochet. I got to say, for a guy that was off TV for a long while, it was good to see Ricochet get back on it. They put the Intercontinental Championship on him. Did well for many months now, having the belt. We know how high Vince is on Gunther. Certainly an amazing worker, a fabulous heel. You know, again, I think the sky's the limit for Gunther and what Vince wants to do for him. That's a match I would have liked to have seen on Hell in a Cell, but I understand why you put it on SmackDown. You want that good rating that SmackDown continues to get. Hell of a match last night. I think Gunther moving forward is going to be one of those menacing mid-card champions that eventually, you know, that he'll transition into the main event picture soon enough.
Yeah, yeah. For every Adam Cole, for every Keith Lee, for every Karrion Kross, there's one Gunther. You know, here's a guy who came in, got himself in tremendous shape, took it seriously, didn't care that he got his name changed, didn't care what happened to him, put his head down and just went to work and trusted the process. And now, you know, he's reaping the benefits of it. And, you know, he's a guy that I think old school wrestling fans could agree on. You know, new school wrestling fans, casuals, everybody looks at him, women, children, it's believable. It's there. He's got that it factor. He's got that intangible. And, I'm just really excited to see what he's going to do on the main roster, especially as Intercontinental Champion and the kind of matches that he's capable of having. I mean, I hope at some point, you know, we get maybe a Survivor Series team with him on it. And I'd love to see him and Brock Lesnar. I mean, I would love to see him mix it up with Roman even. I would love to see him mix it up with a lot of different people. So I'm very excited to see where he's headed and just definitely an incredibly deserving talent, you know, and Ricochet. Let me tell you something. I want to take a moment to put over Ricochet. I mean, you know, this guy, like, everybody knows what a great flyer he is, but he's just a fantastic professional wrestler. All the little things that he does, things that fans don't even think about or know about, you know, he's very good at that. And for him to have the kind of match that he did with Walter, I thought was really cool. And, you know, I hope to see Ricochet on TV a little bit more in the future. I'd like to see them feud maybe for it and, you know, do a little something there. But I'm excited for Gunter, and sky's the limit for that guy.
Absolutely. Again, a good matchup last night. And then to finish off the news cycle here this week, probably the most shocking thing this month, I think, other than Cody Rhodes getting hurt, injured and being out for the foreseeable future between 6 to 9 months, I got to tell you, man, you know, we've talked about on this show, Edge's run in his return since January 2020, I would argue, has been one of the better ones for guys that have been out of the business for a while due to injury. Edge has put on solid mic work, solid matches, going back to his feud with Orton when he came back in 2020, to feuding with Roman Reigns, going into WrestleMania of last year, going into, you know, last summer at Money in the Bank. Certainly Edge coming back and facing up against Rollins. We all remember that great visual last SummerSlam in Las Vegas with the Brood entrance. The feud with The Miz at the start of this year, incorporating his wife Beth into the feud with him with The Miz and Maryse, and obviously him turning heel now after facing AJ, creating Judgment Day. But I got to tell you, man, I just keep thinking that because of Cody's injury, it probably prompted Vince to want to turn Edge face, because this came out of nowhere. I mean, you want to talk about a swerve? I can't remember being swerved this badly in a couple of years in any wrestling promotion, because this really took me up by surprise on Monday when Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, and the newest member, Finn Balor, completely annihilated Edge on Monday night and wrote him off TV for at least a few weeks.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, in typical Mark fashion, you know, Marks are always crying for stuff that's unpredictable. Then they get something unpredictable and they're like, well, why did they have to ruin this thing that I like? Yeah. And it's like, oh, you liked it? Well, you complained about it so much, I never would have thought. But, oh, okay. Getting back to, like, what you were saying about Edge and turning him face, I don't think that it was a matter of turning Edge face. This was kind of the plan all along, because Edge is a really, really big Finn Balor fan. And shout out to my brother Lewis, who used to listen to the Edge and Christian podcast. And on the Edge and Christian podcast, they talked about Finn Balor a lot and how talented he was and how great they thought he was. And, you know, Edge would constantly say that if there was one guy he could come back and work, it would be him. So the plan all along, I think, was for Edge to wrestle Finn. And they're probably going to end up doing it at SummerSlam. And, you know, we might see the Demon return. I know that there was some stuff reported on the dirt sheets that Edge wanted out because – you know, he didn't want to do the supernatural stuff. That's not the case at all. That was reported by Billy Boddy. The plan all along was to have Finn be the new member, and they were going to turn on Edge, and it was going to be Finn and Edge at SummerSlam. Or it might even be a Money in the Bank. We don't know. But it would probably be at a big pay-per-view. And I think this was, you know, where Edge wanted to go in general. So Edge was perfectly fine with the supernatural stuff. I mean, they kind of had like a brood thing going on. I mean, so it was like, it was kind of like getting there. So, you know, I think, you know, to some extent it's a little disappointing. Obviously we wanted to see it kind of continue, but I mean, that's the whole point of it. It's supposed to be disappointing. It's supposed to bother you. You're supposed to like not like it. You know what I mean? Like that's what wrestling's about. It's about getting that emotional response. So, you know, we've all kind of had that emotional response. And, yeah, I'm actually really interested in it. I mean, with Edge in it, yes, you know, it was good because Edge is a tremendous talker. You know, obviously a better talker than Rhea and Damian. And it would have been a good way to push Rhea for the title, push Damian maybe for, you know, a mid-card title or, you know, a main event spot. And that would have been helpful. But Edge wouldn't have been able to compete for the title because they'd already done that before, and that's done already. He got that out of his system. They already worked that. But with Finn in the mix now it's a different dynamic. You could push Finn for a mid-card title. You could push Finn for the main event. You know, you could push them as a tag team. You could do a lot of different things, and I think that it's cool. And again, they're giving Finn Balor something to do. They're giving Rhea something to do. They're giving Damian something to do. They're doing something good with talented people. And I think at the end of the day, that's what, you know, wrestling fans should want to see, right?
Absolutely. And again, I think it was a hell of a swerve. We'll see what happens between now and Money in the Bank. Who knows? Maybe it'll take a few weeks for the new Judgment Day to, you know, lay out people, go on their reign of terror. And maybe at some point, you know, hold off until SummerSlam. Hold off until then. You know, have Edge return, who he returns with to help him against the Judgment Day. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Beth is brought in here, right? I mean, who knows, you know, try to even the odds a little bit, who knows. But the point is that I think it's going to be a very compelling storytelling between now and their eventual showdown between Balor and Edge. Who knows, maybe Edge takes out Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest somehow, leading up to their match, which again only allows a one-on-one. We'll see. There's a lot of different things they can do with this when it comes to this feud, but I think it'll be a hell of a wrestling match. And listen, again, this is not popular for a lot of marks to admit, but Edge coming back and what he's done, you know, I would argue the only person that's ever come close to doing what Shawn Michaels did in 2002, and if you remember for the next 8 years until he retired. I mean, the second half of Shawn Michaels' career was amazing. It was spectacular. It was impeccable. I'll make the case that I'm not saying he's on Shawn Michaels' level, but if anyone's coming close to having a great second run of their career, it's got to be Adam Copeland. I'm sorry. I don't think anyone's even coming close to that.
I'll argue Bryan Danielson. You know, I think that's one. And look, they're both fantastic, and they're both great in their own right. And I think the common ground there is that they both had it taken away from them. So I think that the things that some people might take for granted, like the ability to
Pat, I'll say I think Edge more because of the age when he did it and when he came back.
Yes. That's fair. I mean, look, I'm not taking anything away from Edge. I've said it before. I think he's the greatest Canadian wrestler of all time. You know, He's just immensely talented, and you know, he's had a great second half. I mean, Shawn's obviously had, I think, undoubtedly the best second half of his career of all time. Nobody, I don't think, even comes close. Maybe Danielson and Edge now, but I mean, it was a long while before anybody could even touch that. So you know, I just think that Edge is doing great stuff. And I wouldn't expect anything less. And here's something that we didn't really think about, but like with doing that turn and doing what they did, they've actually built up anticipation for the next episode of Raw. You know what I mean? And we know that you know, marks have this you know, emotional cutter relationship with you know, WWE and Raw in general. But like now I think more people are going to want to tune in to see like what happened, you know, and to see what the fallout is of that. So I think it's a win all around, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And also, I wanted to add to SmackDown, Riddle and Sami Zayn had a fantastic match last night. It was a stipulation match, I think, where if Sami wins, Riddle's banned from SmackDown forever, And if Riddle wins, Riddle gets a shot at the Undisputed title next week. So Riddle ended up winning. And, even if we obviously know that Roman's going to end up winning, you know, it's still a really, really good spot for Riddle. I think Riddle's going to get elevated from this. And I would not be surprised if a certain Viper came back. So let's see how that plays out.
Absolutely. A lot going on in the news cycle here, folks. And again, nobody breaks it down better than the PR superstar and the professor here on Working the Marks. This week's topic is one I know is going to get a lot of attention. It's going to get a lot of marks very salty, especially the AEW fans. But I'm going to go on record right now. I'm going to phrase this in a very convincing fashion. There's going to be no ambiguity here. There's not going to be any, oh, well, what does Fernando mean? No, no. I'm going to context this king here, folks. And I'm going to say it very bluntly. I'll wait for my colleague now to give his two cents. But I will make the argument that CM Punk has been a disappointment for AEW since his return. Yes, I'll say it again, folks. It's not a question mark. It's not like, oh, well, what do you know? CM Punk has been a disappointment for AEW. And I'm going to lay out the case very quick. I know the PR superstar will do it better than I will, but I'm going to say this. You know, we waited 7 years for CM Punk to come back. And when we went to wrestling shows, whether it was WWE, whether it was anywhere else, we would hear CM Punk chants in buildings all across this country. And as a guy who loved CM Punk from Ring of Honor, loved him in WWE, remembers the summer of Punk in 2005, and then in 2011, with that famous pipe bomb in Las Vegas, how over he got to the point where he was kind of neck and neck for a little while with John Cena and selling merch. Never surpassed him, but he was there. It was neck and neck with him. You know, CM Punk had a lasting legacy for wrestling fans. We all heard the podcast in 2014, some months after he left abruptly the WWE, when he sat down with his former friend, Colt Cabana. He laid out his case about what he didn't like about Vince, about Triple H, about WWE's medical practices, about booking, why he wasn't happy, etc. We've all heard the podcast, folks. But this is the issue. We waited 7 years for CM Punk to come back, and he returned last summer at the United Center, at the First Dance, where, let's be honest, the building got sold out without him officially being announced for it, but it was just a hinting of him returning, and the building sold out. In Chicago, no surprise. I would argue whether it was the match with Darby Allin at All Out, matches he's had on TV, from Wardlow to others, to fighting Eddie Kingston. Yes, even the feud with MJF was compelling and entertaining. Let's be honest, folks. It's not been good wrestling. And, you know, as someone who's not a worker, it's easy for me to critique. But this is a guy who's away for 7 years. You know, there are guys who have been away from wrestling for some time. They either work on it some way, somehow. Listen, when he got sensitive about Bischoff's comments and so did Tony Khan after Double or Nothing's media press conference, I'm going to tell you something, folks. CM Punk has been disappointing. He might be making money for Tony Khan. Again, I don't know the logistics exactly, but it's not been good wrestling. It has been not the best mic work. Let's be honest, folks, when he had that eventual showdown with MJF, MJF outshined him, and MJF outshined him on the mic every single time. And that was a feud we were all waiting for. It was a little less than compelling. I'm going to tell you something. I grade people for a living. That's my day job as an educator. I would argue that, and this is not me being harsh, this is me being actually honest and objective. I would grade CM Punk with an F, and that's the grade he has, in my opinion, since his return to All Elite Wrestling. It's been an F. His work, his mic work, and I'm sorry. He might sell T-shirts, folks, on ProWrestlingTees.com. He might get people to mark out at buildings for him, but I'm sorry. The overall return, it gets a grade of F for me, PR superstar.
I first met CM Punk, Phil Brooks, whatever you want to call him, back in 2002, beginning of, I want to say 2002, or the middle of 2002, at the Rexplex, the old Rexplex out in Elizabeth, in the IKEA parking lot out there, for those people who know Elizabeth, New Jersey. And JCW, the company that trained me and my cousin, they were holding the J Cup, the JCW J Cup at the Rexplex that year. And it featured a lot of the top indie talent that was around at the time. Now, check out this list of talent. You had Low Key, Brian Danielson, Reckless Youth, Trent Acid, Billy Real, Black Nature Boy Scoot Andrews, CM Punk, AJ Styles, Colt Cabana, Mike Quackenbush. I mean, like, it was like everybody who was everybody who was everybody in the indies at that time. So the concept of the tournament was to kind of bring the Super J tournament from Japan to the United States and also kind of borrow a little bit from the Super 8, which is the most prestigious independent wrestling tournament. And basically, you know, and some people argue Battle of Los Angeles, but you can kiss my ass because the Super 8's been around a lot longer and East Coast indie wrestling is better, and I'll die on that hill. So, yeah. You know, I met CM Punk that day, and he came in with Colt Cabana. And Colt Cabana was a really cool guy, and Punk was a really, really cool guy. And the thing about Punk that I immediately noticed was that he was very, very, very respectful of all the people that worked in the company, the people who collected the tickets, the people who set up the chairs, the people who put together the ring, you know, the ring crew. You know, myself and my cousin, you know, we were still kind of paying our dues, but, you know, every show we would work, you know, we would always be there. We would do ring crew, you know, I mean, you know, we were there. And Punk was really cool to us, and we were kind of standing by the curtain. So we would just get, like, the signal, you know, or, like, you know, we would just kind of stand there to make sure that, like, everything was okay so that, you know, the talent could walk out through the curtain. So my cousin and I were on either side, and Punk was really cool. And I remember when Punk walked out, he kind of pounded us. He, you know, stuck his fists out and gave us a pound. And he went out. He had a fantastic match with Reckless Youth, but unfortunately ended up getting a concussion, really bad one. He did a Tope de Hilo to the floor and smacked his head on the concrete floor of the Rexplex, and you could hear it. And, you know, I kind of knew something was up, but I think he had also done this one move. I think it was a blockbuster he went for. And when Reckless bumped, he bumped on Punk's head. Like, he took the back bump on Punk's head. So they got kind of tangled up, and it was a little messy. And Punk ended up getting a really bad concussion. At the end of the match, he was walking away, and he took a chair, and he used it as a walker. And we all thought it was kind of funny. I thought it was, you know, clever. Walks away perfectly fine. Maybe like 10, 15 minutes later, my cousin and I see him, and he's walking weird. And he goes, and he ends up by, like, this dock. And he falls down. He leans up against the wall, and he falls down on his ass. And he just starts puking. So my cousin and I go and check him out. And he's puking all this clear brain fluid, and it's, like, all over him. And he's just sitting on the dock, and we're like, yo, something's going on here. So I tell my cousin, hey, go get his boy. Go get Cabana. And he went, and he got Cabana. And Cabana, you know, and, you know, everybody in the promoter came down. And they took away Punk in an ambulance. And, you know, it was really, 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 really wild. You know, and the next time I see Punk, he's WWE champion. But for me, like, you know, I became a CM Punk fan that day because of how cool he was with my cousin and I, you know, because we were essentially nobodies. We were ring crew, you know, and I thought that it was really cool that he was so cool with the people that helped made the show possible, you know, because without the ring crew, without all of that, you know, that's, you know, show's not going to happen. What are the boys going to do it? The promoter's going to do it? No. Like, you know, those people make the show possible. And I just thought it was really, really cool of him. So I followed his career, you know, and, you know, obviously 2011, you had the pipe bomb, you know, you had the whole summer of Punk, you know, his year in 2012, 2013 even. And, you know, I was a real fan of his work. I really enjoyed the stuff that he was doing. I was really happy for him. He wasn't always the best in-ring technician. You know, he was a solid worker. He was a good worker. He wasn't like Danielson or AJ Love or even Low Key, but, you know, he was really good at what he did, and he understood psychology, and he was undoubtedly the best talker of his generation. So he had those things, you know, and he had that it factor, and it was nice to see that kind of shine through in WWE. Obviously, things went south. Everything happened. He left. He was gone for 7 years, to your point. Everywhere you went, CM Punk, CM Punk. Every WWE event in Chicago, CM Punk, New York, all the big mark markets, you know, everybody's chanting CM Punk. And then news starts, you know, breaking that CM Punk's coming back. Okay, people are getting excited. He comes back, you know, big ovation, big emotional moment. Honestly, I would say probably AEW's best moment so far outside of the recent MJF pipe bomb. I would say that was their best moment. And, you know, it was really nice to see him back. It was nice to see him happy, emotional. Like, you know, it was great. It was everything it needed to be. I was not thrilled with who his opponent was. I kind of thought that it was, you know, no offense to Darby Allin. He's a talented worker. You know, for a small guy, he lays it in. You know, he's got a niche. I just think that he could maybe do with toning it down on the crazy stuff because, you know, that does catch up with you. But, you know, I didn't really think it was the kind of opponent that CM Punk needed. It wasn't on his level in terms of star notoriety. And, you know, I wasn't thrilled with it. I wasn't really, it was a good match, but it wasn't what Punk should be doing. So, okay. I was like, you know what? Maybe it's a warm-up match. Fine. No big deal. Let's move on. Let's see where he goes. And then he just ends up working all these other guys, like these undercard guys. And I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this isn't cool. Like, and look, some people could say, well, maybe he's trying to elevate the talent. But, like, you have to reestablish your name. You've been gone for 7 years. Like, yes, the Marks know you. They know about your work. They've watched you. But there's also a generation of people that didn't know you, that didn't get a chance to see you wrestle, that are now, like, teenagers, that are now, like, you know, in their early or in their late teens. So, like, you know, they're able to see you now, and they're able to be like, man, you know, this is cool. CM Punk's back. This guy that I remember for, like, this tiny little blip, like, you know, he's back now. It's fantastic. And, you know, the CM Punk that we're getting or the CM Punk that we got really wasn't the CM Punk I think that fans wanted to see. And as far as it goes with him and the MJF thing, like, you know, people say, well, he elevated MJF. He didn't elevate MJF. MJF got elevated by Cody when he had that feud with him. That's what put him on the map. That's what really, you know, got him out there with AEW. Outside of that, like, he was just this guy who would come out and cut these cheap heat promos that had a little indie buzz. But that was really what elevated him, and that's what gave him, like, that platform that he needed. You know, even that, to me, I thought was just too late. Like, it was already too late in the game for Punk to be taken on him. And then, you know, just the whole predictable build to the belt and everything else, and then just the fact that he's coming in. And look, I'm nobody to say anything about anybody's physique or anything like that. You know what I mean? But, like, I'm also not on TV trying to compete to be a world champion. Because if I was, I wouldn't look probably the way that I look right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't have, you know, some love handles. I wouldn't do that because I'd take into consideration that, hey, I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to be half naked. I'm going to be in front of an audience. I have to look the part. If I want to be a world champion, I have to look the part. He came back. He wasn't big. He, you know, and he never was big to begin with, but he didn't look healthy. Then, you know, the whole UFC thing, which I think people kind of eventually got over. And then just the work. The work wasn't there. The promo stuff wasn't very good. I'm with you on the MJF thing. MJF ate him up. I think MJF took it easy on him because he had a lot more to work with. And just, you know, this entire run to the belt and the match with Paige – It was just all very lackluster. You know what I mean? It's not what I wanted to see from CM Punk. Now, you and I talked about it off the air. You know, I speculate that, yeah, he is banged up. He's probably beat up. It's been a while, you know, and the style of stuff that he's doing there, you know, especially the indie garbage stuff that he shouldn't be doing because he's a name, because he can work in different ways and get that pop that some guys would get from the indie garbage by doing simply a few things. You know, he started doing a lot of that stuff, and I'm sure that stuff caught up with him. And I'm sure that, you know, eventually he was in a place where his body was banged up and he could have used the time off. But do I think that, you know, his foot's broken? Do I think that it's as serious as a letting on? No. I speculate maybe that he had a come-to-Jesus moment with himself, maybe, or maybe – somebody in his circle, maybe could have been his wife, could have been somebody, said, hey, you know, you're calling yourself the best in the world, but you're really not right now. And the matches that you're having, the quality of the stuff that you're doing, your complacency on botching things, you know, in those media scrums and all that stuff, you know, it just, I don't know, man. It's just not what he should be doing. And I think maybe there's a part of him deep down inside that knows that and knows that he could do better. And maybe he needed a reset. Maybe he needed to take some time to himself and say, hey, let's kayfabe this. I got hurt. He's been kayfabing his botches anyway and acting like they're injuries. So why not do it? Make it a little angle. Have him take time off. Have him work out. Have him hit a ring. Have him actually train with, like, top-level people and get himself back to being close to that 2011, 2012, 2013 CM Punk that we saw, the CM Punk that fans remember, the CM Punk that fans adore, the CM Punk that fans chanted for 7 years. That's the CM Punk that I think we need to get back. And I hope that's what happens. And I also hope that at some point we do see him back in WWE so he could finish his career there. But I'm with you. I don't know if I'd grade him and give him an F per se, but I'm just going to leave it at the word lackluster. It's been lackluster. And I hope that he does come back better. I really, really do, because it would not only benefit AEW, it would benefit him, and it would benefit his legacy.
I think also, too, the perception of Punk is that, you know, and we've talked about this off the air, is that what he's tried to do with matches, and we all know how much of a fan he is of Bret the Hitman Hart. I'm a devoted fan of the Hitman. We all know FTR. We saw it last night, right? It's all over Instagram and Twitter, where Bret Hart made an appearance alongside FTR at some independent show. It just seems that, like, he's been trying to emulate Bret Hart in a lot of the matches. If you watch the, you know, just rewatch WrestleMania 8, the match between Piper and Hart for the Intercontinental Championship, and just look at the ending. That was almost identical to what you saw at Double or Nothing with Punk and Paige. Other matches Punk has had, he's tried to emulate, you know, endings that Bret has had in other matches. And I get that. Listen, I'm as huge a Bret Hart mark as there is. There's a show today in New Jersey, as a matter of fact, in Iceland, New Jersey, where there's like a convention today. He's there signing. I mean, great. And I know fans will mark out for that. I love meeting Bret when I have met him a few times. But the problem is that, like, you're trying to emulate a guy you idolize. That's great. I'm not going to listen. I try to emulate a lot of people I idolize in media that, you know, but ultimately I have to be myself and I have to get myself over in what I'm trying to do media wise. It just seems like Punk, who's a guy who's been established in the business, isn't doing that. And again, you can pay homage to somebody and I'm not going to fault him for doing that. But the problem is it's becoming almost like you're trying to photocopy somebody and it's not going to work, you know. Say what you want, folks, but Bret, you know, in his peak, was an exceptional worker. That's not what Punk is now. You know, Punk, some have said, was never really a great worker to begin with. He was adequate. He did what he needed to do. He did it sufficiently. I'm sorry. Now it's looking like he's broken down. You know, yeah, he had 7 years to heal his body, but guess what? That doesn't mean he was training every day. That doesn't mean he was in a ring or working or sparring, but it looks really sloppy. And it's what's funny is that AEW marks and fans have found a way, Pat, to rationalize that this is still good work by him. Like they're willing to overlook the sloppiness just because it's CM Punk because he's back. I get it. You're happy you see someone back. But you can't excuse or overlook the sloppiness. And I think that's what a lot of fans do with him. And clearly we're seeing it with Tony Khan.
Absolutely. I think the rose-colored glasses are on for everybody there. And I understand it. They're happy to see him. Like I said, there's a whole generation of kids, you know, that didn't get – like my son, you know, gets to see CM Punk. He only heard about him. He would only see matches, like, you know, on Peacock. You know, where I pay $10 a month so that, you know, I don't have to deal with ads because I'm not a cheap person. But, he came back and it was just very, like I said, it was lackluster. And to your point, you know, about the Bret Hart thing, like, look, I'm a big Bret Hart fan. I love Bret Hart. Bret Hart was a mark for the Dynamite Kid, him and his brother Owen Hart. They were marks for the Dynamite Kid. They used to do a lot of the Dynamite Kid spots. I mean, most of that WrestleMania 10 match, for as great as it was a lot of Dynamite Kid spots in there. But, you know, Tom Billington, Dynamite Kid, was a very influential wrestler with his style. I mean, and it's not, it just doesn't even end at the Hart brothers. I mean, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Bryan Danielson, you know, Rey Mysterio. I mean, like, so many guys that, like, you know, really, like, love that style and love that style of match that he would have with Sayama and the things that he would do. And, you know, I understand, like, you know, doing, like, being a mark for guys like, you know, Chris Benoit, right? You know, again, it, very unfortunate what happened, but Chris Benoit was a Dynamite Kid mark, and he did Dynamite Kid spots, but he did Dynamite Kid spots so well and added some of his own stuff into it that after a while you forgot about it, and you were just like, man, this guy's a really good wrestler. CM Punk is not doing that. Brett was called the Excellence of Execution for a reason. Everything that Brett did, he did very, very well in the ring. He's a very good worker. You know what I mean? CM Punk doesn't do that now. And again, you know, like with as far as it goes with like the whole Bret Hart thing, like fans didn't chant Bret Hart for 7 years, like the way they were chanting CM Punk for 7 years, you know, unless you were going to Montreal. But like, you know, nobody was doing that. Like fans wanted to see CM Punk. They didn't want to see the Bret Hart cover wrestler. They wanted to see CM Punk. And, you know, I just felt like he was doing a disservice to his own legacy by doing that. I mean, look, taking a finish from a match 25 years ago, fine. It's been going on forever in wrestling. That's okay. That's fine. You know what I mean? But, like, when you copy and paste, like, spots in matches, finishes in matches consistently over a period of time, and then you're wearing the guy's colors, and, you know, you're just like, you're not being what made you you. You're not being what made you a star. And you're being more of somebody else, it just really takes away. And I don't know. I'm just not a fan of that stuff. I'm not a fan of wrestlers being marks for other wrestlers. It, like, for me, like, you could borrow things from other wrestlers and still be yourself. Shawn Michaels borrowed from Ric Flair, but was still Shawn Michaels. Mm. They were both very different characters and very different personalities. You know what I mean? You could still borrow from people and still be yourself. Even Brett. Brett borrowed from Dynamite, but Brett was still Brett. He was still different from Dynamite. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. And that definitely was awful. And then the Tony Khan thing, you know, I mean, look, I don't know the guy personally. I don't know the situation. But to me, it kind of looks like Tony Khan is a really, really, really big CM Punk fan. And he has the opportunity to book his favorite wrestler and to make him his champion, do all this stuff with him. And, you know, I mean, that rant, I mean, we talked about it before. That rant was something special. That rant was something for the books. And to me, I just felt like it really made Tony look bad. It just, I mean, among many other things that Tony's done, whether it's the stuff that he does on social media, he just, he looks like Richie Rich. He's like that kid from The Toy. You know what I mean? Like the little kid from The Toy with Richard Pryor. Like CM Punk is the toy, you know, like, and that's what it is. That's exactly what it looks like. And, you know, I think Khan's lack of awareness, I mean, from Jump Street has been pretty evident. You know, people can argue it all they want, but I mean, the metrics don't lie. It's there, you know? I just think that, you know, I think Punk needs to forget about that. He needs to forget about Bret Hart. He needs to forget about Tony Khan. He needs to forget about all that stuff. He needs to stop listening to what everybody's saying to him, and I think he needs to kind of go back to being what made him successful. And look, there's some people that work better when they're angry. Maybe he needs something to be pissed off about. Maybe the reason why his work at WWE was so good was because he was pissed off, right? Maybe that might be something to that if you think about it. You know what I mean? Everybody's different. Everybody operates different in the workplace. And at the end of the day, yes, it's entertainment to us, and we think it's this big, grand, extravagant, like, wonderful, like, you know, backstage set. No, it's a fucking job. It's a job for these guys. This is their job. This is what they do. So there's going to be people at the job that are happy. There's going to be people at the job that are miserable. But, you know, it's all what everybody does to be able to perform, you know, and to live up to their end of the bargain and to be a part of the collective. So maybe CM Punk needs to get pissed. I don't know. I don't know. I can't really say.
Well, Pat, again, I got to ask, you know, not to put you on the spot because analysts do this all the time. whether it's in the NFL draft, whether it's, you know, off-season reviews. Give me a grade, bro. You got to give me a grade here. Come on. Give me a grade for CM Punk here in AEW thus far.
I'm going to give him a D. And okay. I'm gonna, you know, and I don't mean it in a dirty way for all you perverts out there listening. I'm going to give him a D because he showed up. He showed up. He participated. But there's room for improvement
for sure.
There's room for improvement. I don't think he's been a total failure for them, only because I think he got them from 600,000 or 700,000 to 900,000, maybe sometimes a million. So in that regard, you know, he's been good for them. I'm sure he's sold them T-shirts. I'm sure he's probably their best-selling figure, you know. And I'm sure that he's doing good, like, for what their standards are, for, like, what they're trying to do. So I'll give him a D because of that. But there's definitely room for a lot of improvement. And I hope to see the improvement. I really, really do. Because I think he knows deep down inside that this was not what he's capable of.
Yeah, and listen, to add the fact that even with him as champ, even for 3 days, you didn't see a real big bump in the rating. It's still under a million. And obviously, this past week's Dynamite was, I think, 950,000 again. I think AEW fans have to sort of resign themselves to the reality that this is a niche product for a niche audience. And if Tony Khan's not going to be doing the work necessary to increase the visibility of this company, listen, you can have Dynamite on Wednesday nights on TNT, on TBS, with State Farm, DraftKings, and all these major marketing companies. And that's great. You want that marketing revenue. But guess what? Even with all that, you're still not growing the product to where they're even trying to come close to 1.2. I'm sorry, folks. You know, just barely scraping 1.1 isn't 1.2 or 1.3. And I think with Forbidden Door coming up, right, you have these themed Dynamites, right? This Wednesday you have Road Rager, which I think, you know, that sounds a little aggressive, doesn't it, Pat? You know, Road Rager, I mean, not exactly something I want to glorify.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to glorify Road Rage. I think it's a little disappointing. And you know what? I'm offended. I'm going to hashtag something there, and I'm going to turn it into a thing, and I'm going to get offended, and I'm going to get as triggered as I can. I'm going to get real triggered. And I know that's a scary thing to say in America, but I'm not going to put my hand on a trigger. So don't worry about that. There's no gun.
That's right.
You know, at least not on my end. At least not on my end.
That's it. That's fair.
But yeah, you know, Road Rager. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand what, like, I mean, is he going to do a bumper cars match at this show? Like, I don't know. Like a moped match, you know.
Well, remember, it's the summer. So now these themed Dynamites become prevalent. You have Road Rager coming up this Wednesday. And then at the end of the month, you have Blood and Guts, right? Sort of the resemblance of the original War Games, the two rings, covered in steel with a roof on it. Then you have Fight for the Fallen. Then you'll have Fighter Fest. So, you know, after Forbidden Door, it's pretty much Dynamite.
Wait, Fight for the Fallen, what is that? Do they do a charity thing with that, don't they?
Well,
no, I'm serious. I'm being serious. I'm not even lying.
They have, I think, Run for the Fallen or for Fallen War Veterans. They have, you know, whether it's the Wounded Warrior Project, whether it's
fine.
Heroes.
Cool. That makes sense.
No, absolutely.
But
it's not
but like
it's
Road
not
Rager.
Themed. Well, I mean,
yeah. Like Road Rager. Well, it's the summer. Everybody's drinking. Everybody's getting pissed off and stuck in traffic, you know, because they're going to the beach. Road Rager. Yeah, everybody's road raging, you know.
Yeah, I mean, how much they're driving, I don't know, with these gas prices, but that's for my show on Monday night, folks. But yeah, the after Forbidden Door, you pretty much have a summer of just themed Dynamites, and you have Battle of the Belts coming up probably in July. I think they already announced Battle of the Belts 3. And then it's pretty much until September with All Out, probably in Chicago again. So this is a time where if Punk's going to be out, you got to elevate some people. You got to make compelling matches. And again, Tony Khan's not doing that. And that's a big pill to swallow for a lot of AEW fans who I get into arguments a lot on social media who, you know, feel that, oh, Fernando Uribe is just trolling on these wrestling pages. No, I'm not trying to troll. I'm just pointing out the obvious. And, of course, you know, then it becomes, you know, the classical whataboutisms that we're subjected to. Well, you know, what's Vince doing? I'm like, I never said I'm in love with Vince's product. I like it. I watch it. There are some things I don't like about what Vince does. But guess what? Without even trying, Vince is still doing 1.8, 1.9 on Monday nights and still 2 million on Friday nights. I mean, but this is a serious problem, though, Pat, for Tony Khan. And, you know, again, I think he was banking for Punk to win the championship, have this lengthy title run, be on TV, headline Forbidden Door. That's not happening. I think Khan's going to have to really regroup here, you know, aside from all the other PR messes he's probably going to have this week with, you know, people making fun of his lack of geographical knowledge. It's going to be a it could be a real bad summer for Tony Khan in terms of revenue and ratings if they don't really book better. But that's just my opinion, Pat.
Yeah, I think it could go from the potential summer of Punk to the summer of Funk because it's going to stink for him. So, you know, we'll see what goes on with AEW. I just, I hope that they take this as an opportunity to maybe improve some things. And I'd like to see somewhere down the line a face MJF take on Punk for the title, a heel Punk for the title. I think that would be an interesting dynamic for sure.
Well, folks, I want to leave it right there. Pat, right before we leave our great audience here, last minute thoughts here.
Yeah, man, nothing much, man. You know, I'm going to be signing autographs at El Unico tomorrow. From 1 to 3 p.m. And you might want to stop in. I could sign your rice and beans. And then the following week, I'm going to be performing a spoken word braille show over at the Tickled Pink Petunia. So you can catch me over there. It's an antique shop. And that is for strictly a 79 and older audience. So you don't want to miss that one. And really happy to be on this week. Really happy to chop it up, all things wrestling. Fans, stop being so thin-skinned about, you know, the wrestling that you like. Learn to be objective. Take a look at it. There's nothing wrong with liking something and admitting that it might stink. I mean, I'm a Manchester United fan. We're not the best right now, but I still love them. And I see that there's room for improvement. So, you know, just stop being a little bitch. Pardon my French.
Wow, I couldn't have said it any better myself. Folks, again, check out Real Talk with Fernando Uribe on Monday nights on YouTube, on the Jersey First TV YouTube, and also on Facebook Live. For those of you that use Facebook still, check it out on Monday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Great guests every week and my take on bad journalism in New Jersey. And who I select as the bad journalist of the week, you always want to tune in for that. That's why traffic has been high. Folks, again, make sure you shoot us an email here on the show, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. We will be having some guests later on this summer, ladies and gentlemen, so stay tuned for that. We'll be promoting that, obviously, on social media. Make sure you follow us at @working_the_marks on Instagram. And, of course, check out the show on Twitter, @working_marks. Check out our own Instagrams, @PaddyRican. That's PaddyRican for the PR superstar Patrick Rivera, and of course my own Instagram @NoFilterUribe. And of course, folks, make sure that you check out Working the Marks on Facebook as well. Ladies and gentlemen, always remember, he is the PR superstar Patrick Rivera. I am the Professor Fernando Uribe, and every single week here on Block Talk Radio, you know what we're doing? We are Working the Marks. We'll see you next week here, folks, on the latest edition of Working the Marks on Block Talk Radio. Have a safe weekend. And always, folks, remember, let's keep on talking.